Welcome to episode 10 of the Heyman Lee Mysteries Resolved podcast. My name is Debbie Simons, and today we are going to continue looking at so-called secondary characters in this case. That doesn't mean they're unimportant. That just means they were not directly involved in the case itself, the killing of Hay, or its aftermath and cover-up itself. So last week, I discussed Bilal Ahmed, the man who, on the one hand, got Adnan his cell phone, which of course played a huge part in the case. On the other hand, refused to show up for trial and give Adnan an alibi, and then whose offhand comment, as reported by his ex-wife, that he was going to kill Hay, that he was going to make her disappear, played a part in Adnan's release in September of 2022. So he's pretty important, but he's not directly involved in the actions of the case itself, the killing itself. Today we continue with that theme. I plan to look at three more characters. I may not get to all of them, but just to tell you up front what my plan is, I'm going to look at Hope Schaub, Hay's French teacher, at Kathy Michelle, Anita Baird's then romantic partner, eventually Anita Baird's wife, so therefore Don's stepmother, who now seems to be divorced from Anita Baird. And if we have time, we'll take a quick look at Sheila Kleindienst, who was Don Jr.'s second wife, that is, Don Kleindienst III's stepmother on his father's side. I had previously misidentified Sheila Kleindienst as Sharon, but I will get to that. All right, so let's start out with Hope Schaub, who, as I've looked at her more closely, turns out to be a little more important to this case than had been thought of before. And let me first of all say that I think Hope Schaub has been somewhat misjudged because a lot of people think of her as being hostile to Adnan. She ends up being called as a witness for the prosecution at trial. Christina Gutierrez certainly treats her as hostile, but that might almost be a reason for thinking of her as friendly, since Christina Gutierrez is always getting things wrong. So let's first of all look at who she is. I think almost everybody listening to this knows that Hope Schaub was Heyman Lee's French teacher, but she was far more than that. So again, as you probably know, and as I have actually mentioned before, Hope had taken Heyman Lee on as a student aide. And Hay had apparently, from the information we have, specifically asked that Hope Schaub would mentor her in French. The reason for this special request is almost certainly tied to the fact that Hay had missed out on taking regular French class back, I believe, during her sophomore year. This is the year that started out with Hay's having to miss several weeks of school because she was still in California with her mother and her brother visiting her mother's so-called fiancé. And my theory stated earlier is that when she got back, that French class was full. So I think Hay was feeling a little bit behind. I believe she was also taking regular French class from Hope Schaub. In other words, senior level or advanced French class, and perhaps was feeling a little unprepared for that class. So she had asked for some special tutoring. And so that was taking place first hour every school day. As I've thought about it, I've realized, well, that was somewhat of a sacrifice for Hope Schaub. She's sort of giving up her first hour free period every day to work with this student. Hay apparently also did some work for Shab, perhaps grading papers, recording grades, putting up bulletin boards, who knows, that sort of thing. But, as I said, Shab was far more than just a teacher to Hay. I believe these two young women were actually friends. And note my phrasing, these two young women. Because Hope Shab is only 8 years older than Hay. Now, Shab shows up in the 2019 HBO documentary. And she says at that point that she thought of Hay almost like a daughter. But that is looking back through the lens of time. At this point, at the time of the documentary in this interview, Shab would have been in her mid-40s. I don't know the exact date of that interview. And by the way, she's still stunningly beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. But she's 20 years older. Of course, she doesn't think of Hay as a friend or a buddy or a girlfriend or whatever. She thinks of her in a sort of motherly way. But I am just reasonably sure that that's not the way Shab thought of Hay at the time. They were friends. They had breakfast together. They gossiped. They talked about their boyfriends. We know that because of various things that Hope Shab says on the stand at Adnan's trial, which we will, of course, get to. They were both interested in fashion. So Shab says, again, in the documentary, that Heyman Lee would come in every morning carrying her coffee, showing that she is a young woman with the right priorities in her life, wearing some cute little outfit, and her long hair was beautiful and shiny. And others of Hay's friends talk about the fact that she always dressed nicely. There are little sketches in Hay's diary. I'm sure normally she used a regular sketch pad, but she was apparently struck with some kind of inspiration one day, and the only paper she had available to scribble on was a page in her diary. So these two young women have a lot in common, even if you discount the main thing, which is their interest in the French language. We also know that Hay is intending to go on the trip to France that the upper-level French class is planning to take in February. Sadly, she never gets to go on that trip, of course. She's dead before then, but she has saved up her money. That $3,000 that she mentions that she has access to is her French trip money. So the two young women are very close. They have a warm, personal friendship. Yes, they are student and teacher, and I don't think that that was ever overstepped. There is no indication that Hope Shab ever had any contact with Hay outside of the classroom, and she's asked specifically on the stand at trial, did you ever have any contact with Hay's family, and she says no. So within the confines of that French classroom, they are friends, they are student and teacher, they are mentor and mentee. So that's the first set of facts to keep in mind about Hope Shab. If you have to pick a camp for her to belong to, she belongs to the camp of Heyman Lee. All right, now let's go on to an incident that ends up coming to the ears of Kevin Urich, the prosecutor, and he wants to ask Hope Shab about this. And remember, I've already mentioned this, but let me emphasize this. Hope Shab appears at trial as a witness for the state, for the prosecution. If Christina Gutierrez had been on her game, I think she could have been asked to be a defense witness, but alas, that did not happen. So Kevin Urich is interested in Hope Shab for two reasons. The first one is that he's heard this story. This must have shown up in some kind of police reports that were garnered when O'Shea and other Baltimore County people came to Woodlawn on February 1st to interview students and teachers. There is this story that somehow Hay one day was hiding out from Adnan, and that Hope Schaub helped her do this. So, of course, you can see how this would be grist for the prosecutor's mill, that Hay was afraid of Adnan. She was hiding from him. And that is laying the foundation for this later idea that Adnan actually killed her. By the way, Christina Gutierrez does not want Hope Schaub to testify. There is actually a bench conference at trial between Gutierrez, Kevin Urich, and the judge. And Gutierrez is saying, I don't see how this witness is relevant. I don't see that anything she has to say has anything to do with this case. And Urich's defense, which actually is perfectly reasonable, is, Your Honor, I'm trying to build a picture of the relationship between the defendant and the victim. So the judge says, all right, I'm going to allow this witness to testify as long as I feel that what she has to say is indeed relevant. And Christina Gutierrez says, I want to register an ongoing objection. And what that seems to mean is that she can pop up and down like a jack-in-the-box at any juncture in this testimony, which she does. Now, when I get to the actual testimony here, I am not going to try to read the testimony or to record all of the times that Christina Gutierrez interrupts because it's just so irritating. But keep in mind that, number one, I am giving you information that Hope Schaub gives under oath at trial. And number two, it's constantly being interrupted. But Urich is very interested in Schaub, so he does his best to get her to tell the jury what he thinks is relevant. So he starts out by asking Schaub a little bit about herself. Has she ever dated men who were not of her faith? She is a Roman Catholic. She professes not to know what kind of church Hay attended. She says, we never discussed it. I think she may have been some kind of Baptist. That's very odd. Hay belonged to a very devout Roman Catholic Korean family. I'm puzzled as to why that was never mentioned. But anyway, Schaub is asked, what religion are you? She says, Roman Catholic. She's asked, have you ever dated a man outside of your faith? And funnily enough, she says, yes, I have dated 4 Jewish men. Sounds as if she had been keeping a tally or something. Okay, with that background filled in, we move on to this putative, Hay was afraid of Adnan and was hiding out. So Urich asks Schaub, during the times that Hay was in your class for first hour when she was acting as your student aide and you were mentoring her, did Adnan Syed ever come by your classroom? Now, I expected her to say it was just once, but I was very surprised. I had made myself go back to check this testimony. I thought I was remembering things clearly, but I wasn't. So it's always good to go back and check. She says, yes, he came by sometimes. Well, how often? Oh, 2 or 3 times a week. I was very surprised. I thought, what? This is supposed to be a tutoring, mentoring, student aiding first hour, which remember is an hour and a half because Woodlawn has blocked scheduling. And you're letting Hay's boyfriend just drop by several times a week? That seems odd. But she's not questioned about that. It sounds pretty loosey-goosey to me, to be honest. And this 2 or 3 times a week frequency is easily explained, by the way, by the aforesaid block scheduling. So Adnan must have had a free first hour for either A days or B days. So 1 week, his A days would be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then the next week, they would be Tuesday and Thursday. And so he would just come early on his, we'll say his A days, and have a little bit of time to drop by Hope Shop's classroom and see his girlfriend. And then the bell would ring and he'd go on to his second hour class. That's the scenario that makes the most sense. And it feeds into this whole idea of Hayes and Hope Shop's rather loose, informal, friendly relationship. So then she is asked, did there come a day when Adnan Syed came by your classroom and Hay was not there? She says, yes. Am I permitted to say I don't remember exactly when? Yes, of course, you're permitted to say that. This has to have been, I'm going to say, sometime in November. And the reason I say that is because it is the end of October, the disastrous homecoming dance, which we've already talked about, when Adnan's parents come to the school gym. They don't go into the dance. They send somebody in to get Adnan and they make him leave. And of course, his date for the evening was Hay. She's embarrassed, humiliated, outraged, as is Adnan. And it's after this event that Hay starts saying, we're just going to have to break up. The famous breakup note is written the first day of school, November 1st or 2nd, after that dance. The dance is Friday or Saturday of that weekend. So sometime in November, Adnan comes by Hope Shab's classroom, first hour, expecting to see Hay, and Hay isn't there. So Shab is taken through this series of events. And again, Christina Gutierrez is interrupting constantly, but here's what we managed to get from Shab, in spite of all those interruptions. Adnan comes in, he looks around, he's clearly expecting Hay to be there, she's not there. He doesn't apparently say anything to Shab. He sits down in the back of the classroom, kind of looks out the window, maybe drums his fingers on the desk, who knows, he's clearly waiting. He's clearly expecting Hay to show up. Maybe she's in the bathroom. She'll be right back. After a couple minutes, it becomes clear that Hay is not going to show up. So what does Adnan do? He starts talking to Hope Shab, and he asks some very reasonable questions. He says, do you think that an interfaith relationship can survive on love alone, or does there have to be a common religious and cultural background for the relationship to survive? Now, folks, if you think about it, that's a very good question. It shows a certain level of maturity and perceptiveness on Adnan's part, and I don't think I have to be on Team Adnan. I am. But I don't have to be prejudiced in his favor to recognize that that's a very good question. It also tells us something. It tells us that Adnan must know that Hope Shab has dated guys herself who are not Roman Catholics, that she indeed has been involved in interfaith relationships herself. What does Hope Shab answer? Well, we don't know because Christina Gutierrez pops up. But then the phone rings. And this is a primitive device. It is a wall phone that connects the classrooms to each other and also to the office. So if a teacher needs to talk to another teacher and, say, get a student out of class, or if a teacher needs to talk to the office or whatever, that this is a little closed system. So the phone rings, Shab picks it up, and it's Hay. And she immediately says, don't say anything. Don't let on that it's me. So what Hay has obviously done is found an empty classroom. that's unlocked and gone in and used the phone. And so then we don't know what Hope Shab says to Hay, and we don't know what she says to Adnan because of Gutierrez's constant interruptions. The story kind of ends right there. So we never know, did Adnan just give up and leave, or did the bell ring, or whatever. But the way the story is presented, it sounds as if Hay is cowering somewhere and saying, ooh, don't let Adnan know it's me. Is he there? I don't want to come to class if he's there. But that's not really what's going on at all, if you think about this logically. Hay and Adnan have been arguing over whether or not to break up. Hay wants to break up. Adnan never shows any indication that he wants to break up with Hay. Now, as soon as she definitively breaks up with him, then he's off to the races, as we've talked about before. But right now, he's still very, very interested in continuing the relationship. And there's an indication, there are hints here and there, that perhaps Hay and Adnan had gotten into an argument before school that day, standing on the steps in front of Woodlawn or whatever, and they had been overheard. Or maybe they had had a fight on the phone the night before and Hay had told her friends about it. But whatever happened, there has been this, I'm going to call it a fight. Maybe a better word would be an argument. There's been this argument. And Hay just feels that there is no point in continuing this. She doesn't want to get into further arguing in front of Miss Shab, her beloved French teacher. So when first hour came, Hay just decided, I'm not going to go to class. Or maybe, we don't really know. Maybe she saw Adnan coming and ducked into the bathroom, or we just don't know. We cannot get a clear indication of the exact sequence of events. But what is clear is that Hay doesn't want to talk to Adnan. Not because she's afraid of him. That is so absurd. What is the idea supposed to be? That Adnan's going to beat her up in front of Hope Shab? Of course not. That he's going to yell at her? Of course not. She's tired of dealing with this. I don't want to talk to him. We've all been in situations like this. So she either doesn't come to class at all, or she excuses herself to go to the bathroom or something, and because she knows Adnan usually comes to the classroom, let's say, 15 minutes before the bell rings. So I want to be sure to be out of here before then. We just don't know. But she's not there. And so because Gutierrez is allowed to interrupt this story, and then egregiously, she doesn't then cross-examine Hope Shab to try to get the full story, the jury is left with the impression of exactly what Kevin Urich wants them to think, which is Hay is afraid of Adnan. She's hiding from him. And of course, the jury's already been set up to think that there's something sinister in this story, because Gutierrez has tried so hard to keep Hope Shab off the stand. I would have thought, why is this story so awful for Adnan? Well, it wasn't awful at all. It was Adnan trying to get some good advice from somebody both he and Hay like. And he knows that Hay respects and admires Hope Shab. Maybe Shab can give the two lovers some advice, whatever. Now we go on to the next sequence of events, which Urich, with great difficulty, questions Shab about. And this is another infamous event that makes Shab look as if she's working for the police and against Adnan. But again, it shows nothing of the sort. So this is the fact that Shab has made up a list of questions to go around and ask students about Hayes and Adnan's relationship, and in particular, places where they used to hook up for sex. Colin Miller is absolutely outraged by this in season one of Undisclosed. He says, this is totally inappropriate. And he's right. It is. But I think the story isn't quite as it has been pictured. So let's go back here and see what happens. So we know from Susan Simpson's reporting in season one that Hope Schaub had told some friend or friends of Hayes that Hay and Don were making plans to move in together. So if you will recall, I said that that was the little spark that set off my own odyssey into this case, because that gave me an idea for a motive for why Don would be trying to break up with Hay. She was just pushing things too far. Next episode, we're going to be looking at indeed another factor in Don's wanting to break up with Hay, and that is the reemergence into his life of Robin Kelly, who is now his wife, Robin Kleindienst. So be sure to come back next week to hear all about Robin. But here, we just have this little stray nugget of information about Hope Schaub's apparent knowledge of Hay's desire to move in with Don. So let's now backtrack in time here. We've been looking at the trial, but this particular bit of information is not brought out at trial. So let's go back to the day that Hay disappeared, January 13th, 1999. We know that Young Lee tries to call some of Hay's friends. He calls Adnan and several other people. Nobody knows anything. There's no record that he called Hope Schaub. I don't think Schaub was in Hay's address book, further bolstering the idea that Schaub did not have a relationship with Hay outside of the classroom. And then, of course, Adcock does some calling also. But nobody knows anything because nobody is involved. He tries to get a hold of Don, Adcock does, and as we all know, he's not able to get a hold of him until early the next morning. But at some point, a student does call Hope Schaub. This is what must have happened. And it was not on Wednesday night. There's a passing reference that somebody tried to call her, but she was out with her boyfriend. And then, of course, the ice storm descended and probably a lot of phone lines were down. So I'm going to guess that by Friday afternoon, phone lines were up and somebody calls Hope Schaub. I'm going to nominate Debbie Warren just because she seems to be one of the more sensible and proactive people in this case, even though she does also have that ridiculous 7-hour conversation with Don. But anyway, Debbie Warren or one of Hay's other close friends. I'm pretty sure Debbie Warren was in French class. So it would make sense that she would be the one to call Schaub and say, Miss Schaub, listen, do you know anything about Heyman Lee? Nobody has seen her since she left school on Wednesday. We've been paging her, and she hasn't answered. And of course, we know why she's not answering. That pager has been stomped on and thrown into the woods or the bushes. But anyway, we've been paging her. She doesn't answer. And we're just all frantic. Do you know anything about her? Now, as I've mentioned before, Hope Schaub has kind of a soft spot in my heart because she's a high school teacher, and I was a high school teacher for many years. And so I can kind of put myself in her shoes here and think about how would I respond if I got some kind of frantic call from one of my students. I think my first inclination would be to try to calm the waters. And so I'm kind of thinking that this is why she says what she says about, oh, Hay has been making plans to move in with Don Kleindienst, you know, that new guy, the guy she's been dating for less than 2 weeks. I think that's where she must be. She is betraying a confidence by saying this, but she's trying to calm the waters. So don't worry, that's where she is. And because she may not be thinking exactly in terms of the timeline, her attitude may be, she may have even said this, I bet she went over to see Don and then she got stranded by the ice storm. Now that can't, of course, actually have happened because the ice storm didn't start until 4 the next morning, the morning of January 14th. But as I say, she may not be thinking through the timeline clearly. She just wants to calm this student down. And of course, inwardly, she's thinking, oh, that girl, she's going to be in such trouble. Why is she doing this? So then, whoever this is who talks to Hope Schaub on Friday afternoon, of course, goes to Krista Meyer's 18th birthday party at the fire station. And we are told in the HBO documentary, Debbie Warren is the main one who says this, we were all talking about the fact that Hay wasn't there. And she had promised faithfully to be there. She was one of Krista's closest friends. And we're all wondering if something has happened to her. But we tried to just get on with the party and enjoy ourselves. Now, Debbie Warren does not mention in this documentary this idea that maybe Hay had gone to live with Don. Maybe she was with Don. That's only mentioned by Susan Simpson in Undisclosed. And I would sure like to be able to question Hope Schaub a little more closely about this. I did try to reach out to her, and by the contact info that I had, which wasn't much, and I got no response from her. But that's where that story comes from. Hay is with Don. That's why she doesn't show up for the birthday party. Then, as we've talked about a number of times, there's the weekend, and then there's Monday, the 19th, which is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Finally, on Tuesday, everybody comes back to school. Now, here's where something happens that is not recorded anywhere, but I think makes perfect sense, and that is that Hope Schaub walks into her classroom Tuesday morning, fully expecting Hay to be there, and fully expecting to be able to deliver the speech that she's been revolving in her mind all weekend. How could you do this? Don't you understand how worried everybody has been? You are going to just destroy your family's trust in you. You've been so upset that your mother doesn't trust you. Well, guess what? Now she's really not going to trust you. Blah, 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 blah. I'm sure she has a whole diatribe and there's nobody to give it to. I just imagine that silent classroom. And she looks around and she thinks, where is that girl? Why isn't she here? And then I imagine either the office calling her or that she calls the office and says, has Hay's family contacted the school to explain why she's absent this morning? And the office says they have called and they say that Hay is missing, and that the police are involved, and that they are asking that we please not count these absences against her. They are doing everything they can to find her. And again, this is in my imagination, but I can just vividly picture Hope Schaub hanging up that phone with this horrible sinking feeling in the pit of her stomach. What has happened to her? This is not like her at all. She would be here. Where can she be? So now we go to what I think Schaub did. And this makes sense in view of facts that we actually have. So I've said before, I may speculate, but my speculations are always tied to bits of evidence that we have. So we know that it's only on Tuesday, January 19th, that it's really brought home, not just to Hope Schaub, but to Hay's friends, that she really is missing, that it's been 5 whole days since anyone has seen her because of this weird progression of events, the ice storm, and then the weekend, and then the Monday off for the holiday. So it's not until Tuesday that everybody kind of wakes up. Yes, her friends have been trying to page her, but they also know that the power has been out. Maybe her pager ran out of power. Who knows? But now no one can escape the idea that something bad has actually happened to her. She's missing. So my postulation here is that at some point, maybe that day, or maybe she gives it one more day, but she's been told, I believe, by the office, the police are involved, and she decides, maybe I'd better call them and tell them about Don Kleindienst. I wonder if they even know about him. And she said she wanted to go live with him. Has he done something to her? What's going on here? Now remember, Hope Schaub has never met Don Kleindienst. She just knows about him through Hay. So I would say that she calls the police. Now remember, I keep emphasizing this. This is the Baltimore County Police. This is the missing persons department in Baltimore County. And so she calls and she talks to somebody. And she says, I'm calling about that missing girl. I want to report a name that you may not have looked at. And her name would be jotted down. This is very important. The police would have taken down her information. Now, ma'am, who are you? You teach her, blah, 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 Hope Schaub at Woodlawn High School. Okay, good. You think that we should take a look at this Don Kleindienst. Now, ma'am, we have talked to him. I have a notation here. He was called and he says he hasn't seen her since the night of the 12th. And yes, ma'am, I see here that Harford County, where he lives, did a sweep of his neighborhood. Now, remember, I mentioned this. I think that's very telling that they did that. That shows me somebody's on the ball in Baltimore County. And no, ma'am, her car has not been found either. But we will take down this information. This is very helpful that you're saying that the person, the missing person, was talking about going to live with this young man. All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. So let's say that call comes in on the 20th. Now, we know that 2 days later, on Friday, January 22nd, that by that point, Joseph O'Shea, who is an actual detective, has been assigned to this case, and that he calls Don, and it's not just, when did you last see this missing person? He has quite an extended conversation with Don. And of course, I went over this in some detail when I talked about Don's alibis. Why does he do this? Well, I think he does this because this phone call from Hope Schaub is reported to him. And his superiors say, you know, I think we better look into this a little bit more. This doesn't sound like a typical runaway at all. We're going to assign you to the case, and we want you to dig a little deeper into this Don Kleindienst person. So he does so on the 22nd. And Remember, folks, as I keep saying, I know I sound like a broken record, but Baltimore County, the Joseph O'Shea really tried. They really tried to figure out what was going on with Don, and it's just all seems to be perfectly rock solid that he was working that day. Fast forward to February 1st. So that's the day, it's probably the day after the first anonymous call comes in saying, you ought to look at the boyfriend and the ex-boyfriend. We don't have an exact transcript of that call, but what the police do on February 1st tells us what must have been in that call, both young men. So Baltimore County Police come to Woodlawn, and that's the day that they do the interviews with Adnan, with various and sundry students and teachers, and they get nowhere because there's nowhere to get. But that is also the day that they talk to Hope Schaub and do this informal deputizing that Colin Miller is so outraged about. Here's what I think happened. First of all, one of my big reasons for saying Hope Schaub had already been in touch with Baltimore County and had passed on what she knew about Don and had given her name is that the police must have known about her when they went to Woodlawn. They didn't just look around when they were at Woodlawn and say, hey, look, there's that pretty cool young French teacher. I bet the students would talk to her. Let's go over and see if she'd like to become a liaison with us. That cannot be how it happened. It must have been that when they went to Woodlawn, they already knew Hope Schaub's name. And they already knew that she was a close associate of Hayes. So when they don't get anywhere, it makes sense. It may not be completely appropriate, but it makes sense that they talked to her after they'd done all their other interviews and said, look, nobody seems to know anything. Could you kind of keep your ears open? I doubt it was anything more formalized than that. Kind of keep your ears open. See if anybody says anything. Maybe ask around a little bit. And if you pick up any bits of information that you think would help us figure out where she is, then let us know. I don't think it was anything more than that. And here's where I think Hope Schaub kind of got a little over her skis, as they say, a little overzealous, thinking, oh, Hope Schaub, amateur detective. And I'm not really making fun of her because she's very worried about Hay. At this point, Hay, February 1st, Hay has been gone for, what, 2.5 weeks, 3.5 weeks? Anyway, it's obvious that this is no mere going off with a boyfriend for the weekend thing. She's really worried, and so she thinks, okay, well, I'm going to make sure that I find out what's going on. The police have told her that as far as they have been able to determine, Don Kleindienst has an alibi, and that they really need to know a little bit more about Adnan. It's not that she turns against Adnan. She just figures, well, Don seems to be in the clear. And unless this is some random serial killer or something, the only other person that leaves is Adnan. So let me see what I can find out. So she puts on her deerstalker hat and she draws up this list of questions. So she doesn't go around asking students questions herself. She deputizes Debbie Warren. And of course, we know the story. I've talked about this before. Debbie Warren puts this sheet of paper with the 5 questions. The first one being, do you know of any special places where Adnan and Hay would go to hook up? She sticks it in the back of her agenda. And then, as luck would have it, Adnan borrows that very agenda to use as his hall pass to go to the bathroom because he's forgotten his agenda at home and the sheet is peeking out or it falls out or something. Maybe he was carrying the agenda along by the spiral binding, and the sheet of paper just falls out. And you can just imagine this. I can imagine it because I have a very good imagination. He leans over and he picks up this piece of paper that's fallen out of Debbie's agenda, thinking, oh, I need to stick this back in. And he looks at it. And it says, questions to ask students about Adnan's and Hay's relationship. Please return to Hope Shab. And he thinks, what is this? Why is this teacher asking questions about me? I thought she was my friend. What? So he returns the agenda to Debbie, but he does not return this sheet of questions. And then, of course, we know, and this again is discussed on the stand by Hope Shab, he brings that sheet of questions in to her. And he puts it on her desk and he says, please don't go around asking questions like this about me. It might get back to my parents, and they don't know everything that's going on in my life. Frankly, I think the way Adnan words this is just one more evidence of his total and utter innocence. He's not worried about Shab finding out something incriminating. He's just worried that this will get back to his parents, that there were indeed places where he and Hay would go to hook up for sex. And so she takes the sheet of paper back, and that whole little incident with trying to be the liaison for the Baltimore County Police goes poof, as Susan Simpson would say. And she never does. She never pursues that any further. So then she doesn't do anything else. Until, and I'm going to end with this incident, and it looks to me as if I've gone long enough that I'm going to have to save my other two people for the next episode. Hope Shab, you have a lot of interesting stuff about you, and I think I'm just going to give you your own episode here. Shab says something very interesting to round out a series of events. The day that the students at Woodlawn were told that Hay's body had been found, that Hay was dead. I think it was February 10th, the next day. And we know that this was a huge source of upset, of emotional upset with the students and the teachers. They had all loved Hay. They had all known her. And they've been going about their business, but in the back of their minds has been this niggling worry. Whatever happened to Hay? And now her body has been found. We know there are grief counselors. And then Shab says, and I can't remember, I think this was on the stand. She says that Adnan was just crying, falling apart. Again, such an indication of his utter innocence. Up until this point, he hasn't known any more than anybody else that Hay is dead. And so she says, I went up to him and I gave him a hug, and he didn't respond at all. He kept his arms right down at his sides. I think she says something like, he's almost like a block of wood. And she says, I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have hugged him because his religion says that he's not supposed to have physical contact with a girl. So I kind of backed off. And I read that and I thought, Hope Shab, what are you talking about? You know perfectly well that Adnan Syed has had physical contact, to put it mildly, with Hay. I don't see how she could not have known that Hay and Adnan were physically involved to at least some extent. I don't know that Hay gave her the graphic details, but she knows that Adnan does not have a record of never hugging a girl. That's ridiculous. Why does Adnan react that way? Well, he reacts that way because Hope Shab is the one who was going around asking nosy questions about him. And he just kind of shrinks back from her embrace, even in the midst of his emotional turmoil. He thinks, why is this lady hugging me when she was trying to dig up dirt on me? And then Hope Shaw disappears from the scene. She, of course, testifies at trial, which I've already covered, and she stays at Woodlawn for several more years. And then she, I believe, went to another school and she got married. She has a child. And as far as I've been able to tell, she is no longer in high school teaching. She's involved in her husband's ministry. And I will leave it at that. So Hope Shaw is not an anti-Adnan person. She is not hostile. She is somebody who I think really tried to get the police to pay attention to Don Kleindienst, who perhaps played a part in getting Joseph O'Shea to re-examine, re-interview Don on January 22nd. And she is the one who holds that little bit of information about Hayes' desire to go live with Don that I think was the spark that set off this whole tragic, tragic explosion that resulted in the death of this beautiful young woman. So we've spent a whole episode on Hope Shaw. I can't believe it. There's a lot to say about her. Come back next week and we'll try to cover Catherine Michelle and Sheila Kleindienst, and we'll save Robin for her own episode. So come back next week, and thank you for listening for today.